morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Do I need to have this closer or a little bit closer? This close? Like this? Like this? Okay. Did I say I'm Diana and I'm an alcoholic? I just want to start by just reading a little thing because I'll forget. And I just felt this was, I wrote this the other night because I just felt it was really important to acknowledge the people that put this together. And I just would like to say my hat's off to the Roundup Committee for working together one more time to give us this beautiful weekend to celebrate our sobriety, the gift of sobriety. Ronnie, thank you for giving me an opportunity to share on this panel so early on Saturday morning. Back in the old days, I'd be just coming home from partying. Here we are, up and ready to roll. And thanks, thank you for allowing me some time. I was going to say I don't have much time, but we got more time than we thought we were going to have because, of course, things change. And first, I'd like to say that I belong to the Lakeshore AA group in Christopher Lake, Saskatchewan, Canada. And I have been a member of that AA group since March 11th, 1986, which happens to be my sobriety date. I haven't always loved being a member of this group. However, fear and common sense have kept me there many times. Christopher Lake is a small village, and it's about a half an hour from the city where there's a lot more meetings. And of course, there's only one meeting in Christopher Lake. So I had to learn early in my sobriety to practice the traditions, because I knew I needed Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't always have money for gas to drive to the city for meetings, and I had three small children. Well, I didn't have three small children when I first got sober. I only had one. And my husband was getting sober at the same time. So the only thing I can tell you is by the time I finally came to Alcoholics Anonymous for hopefully the last time, I knew without a shadow of a doubt that I was powerless over alcohol. Is this okay? Okay. I don't think I need to go. I'm not going to go into much of my drunkologue because I believe that the topic of this meeting is working the steps and the traditions in our daily living. So I qualified to be here. I drank too much. My life was messed up. My head was messed up. And I came here full of shame and guilt and remorse and some hatred. And probably a few, no self-esteem. But I didn't think I was all wrong. It was just mixed up. We're just coming here mixed up. And I was told by a lot of old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous that if I practiced the steps, if I did the steps and practiced them in my daily living, I would learn how to live sober and also build a relationship with my higher power, whom I choose to call God. And I got it, you know, we hear lots of different stories when we come here. And my first introduction to an AA meeting was when I was in detox, and these two people came in. It's funny, I remember their names. It was Alex and Billy. Billy was an old gal that, you know, she must have smoked three packs of smokes a day, and she drank a lot of booze, and she sounded rough, and she was tiny and rough and tough, and but she was just a beautiful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when they shared their stories, I didn't think I belonged in that detox. I didn't think I belonged in Alcoholics Anonymous. But when I listened to them, I sure could relate to what they were saying. And so I thought, you know, maybe you better to pay attention a little bit. But then I also met a guy when I was in that detox. And he was young and cute and fun, and we could have heart-to-hearts. And and that really was all it was at that point. But I started to like him. There's something wrong with my brain. I can't just like a guy and just like him for just to be a friend. So of course that went a little bit further. And he is the guy that I married. And can you relate?
You
know, our stories really aren't all that unique. We seem to all do a lot of the same thing. I thought I was so unique, but I'm really not. But I come from a family where we've got pretty good spirituality / religion, and I really thought that my family would save him. And I don't know, I didn't think I was going to save him, but I thought my family would. But what I found out as time went by is that you can't save somebody if they don't want to be saved. And it was the same for myself. I wasn't ready to be saved by Alcoholics Anonymous till I was ready to be saved. And that took marrying this guy, having a baby, going back drinking a couple of times, being in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, but never totally giving myself to it. And finally, on what I hope is my last drunk. My last drink was rubbing alcohol. I learned about that in the detox. I didn't know you could drink rubbing alcohol and get cure the shakes and so on, but it doesn't feel good, but it it worked. And so that was my last drink. I was puking into a porta potty because we didn't have running water in our house, and my baby was 5 months old. And you know, as I was doing all this, I can still see myself, and I hope I never forget it, because I'm, you know, bent over this porta potty, and my baby, she had crawled, and she was sitting in the bathroom doorway, and she's watching her mom puke into a porta potty from rubbing alcohol. And I looked at her, and I looked at the toilet, and I thought about the guy that I met in detox, and I just knew, and it wasn't a thought, it was like something said to me, if you keep doing this, even he's gonna throw you out, and your baby will grow up knowing that her mom was a drunk. And I couldn't do it. And I knew, it's like my insides pleaded for help. And you know, I can't tell you how long it was, but it was within a couple hours, I know it. A member from the Lakeshore group at Christopher Lake came knocking on the door. And I was so sick, it was in the middle of the week, my husband wasn't home, he was at work, and this guy was my husband's friend. Anyways, he knocked on the door, and I opened the door, and he says, hi, how are you doing? And I said, oh, not good. And you know that feeling of you just feel awful, and you're shaking, and you think you're gonna die, and you need a drink, but you don't wanna take a drink. And he said, are you ready to come back? And he just had this nice smile on his face. Are you ready to come back? And I said, yes. And so the following Sunday, I came back to a meeting, and haven't stopped going to meetings since. And funny thing, I haven't had to have a drink. But what I believe happened is my first spiritual awakening or miracle, I'm not sure what to call it, was after that moment when I felt that, that I knew I couldn't do this anymore. And it was, sometimes they call this prayer, it's like a groaning. It's like there's no words. It's just my whole being knew I needed help. And my higher power sent the help. And I haven't had a desire for a drink ever since. And I'm so grateful for that, because it's put the alcohol out of the way so that I could start working on these steps. And it was such a feeling of relief, because I knew there was another 11 steps I could work on to get my life in order, because my life was so messed up. So slowly I started to work on that. I didn't jump into the steps. I didn't get a sponsor right away. I lived out in the boondocks, and of course, you know, that might be an excuse to not find a sponsor. There was two ladies in my group. I didn't want what either one of them had. And we didn't have a phone. So I guess I could have belonged to Loners Anonymous at the time, and or the Loners meeting, Loners AA meetings. And I just kind of, I don't even know what the word is. I just plugged along. But I did go to the meetings. I had no desire to drink. And learned what I could in the AA meetings. And then after a few months of sobriety, the members started telling me about this GSR. And at the time, I think I was sober for 3 or 4 months, and they told me what a GSR was. And like, I had spent the last 2 years struggling to stay sober, and or not stay sober, I'm not sure what I was doing, but I wasn't staying sober. And when they were explaining what a GSR does, and GSR goes to these district meetings, and then they gotta bring the information back to the AA group, and they should stay sober in between. And I thought to myself, well, you know, if I could be this GSR and I'd have to do this, then maybe that would keep me from drinking. So, but I didn't want anybody to know I wanted to do it, because you know, when you want something, somebody else wants to take it away from you. So. Nobody wants to be a GSR, but I found that out later. And so of course, one of the guys says, well, Diana, why don't you be the GSR? And I said, well, yeah, okay, I guess I could do that, you know. And I was thankful to get the position, and I just didn't want them to know that I was thankful. And so that is how I learned to live sober, was through being a GSR. And I got to do that for a few years. And in that, of course, we meet more people. We learn about that to enjoy ourselves in sobriety. and we learn about the importance of the steps and the traditions and the concepts as well, of course. And it was through that that somebody introduced me to who was to be my sponsor, and she has been my sponsor for a long time, I think like about 35 years. And we have a wonderful relationship, and she teaches me by the book, and she has a sense of humor. And when I came here, one of the things I thought is, how am I going to have fun? Because I was a party girl. I liked having fun. And how am I going to have fun if I get sober? Like, it's just going to be drudgery. And this lady laughed a lot. She laughed at herself. She laughed at the things she did. I'd share stuff with her, and we'd laugh about it, and I just liked her. And I thought, I want to be like her. She did have what I wanted. So, of course, you know, then she tells me what I have to do. Like, it's not all fun and games. You know, you pick up your book, you read your book, and one of the first things she said is you do step 3, 7, 10, and 11 every day. And so I said, okay. Well, I didn't do that for a couple of years. And, you know, it's like most everything in my life. I wanted to feel good, but I didn't want to do the work to get feeling good. And so all I did was made my life harder and everybody around me, too. So finally, I'd phone her and I'd be complaining about something. And she'd say, well, did you read steps 1, 3, 7, 10, 11 this morning? And I'd lie and say yes. And she'd give me some sort of advice. And I'm sure she knew, but she didn't give me a hard time over that. Finally, one day, I thought, you know, maybe I better find these prayers and read them every day. And I couldn't ask her where they were, so I started at the beginning of the book, and I kept reading till I found them. It's amazing what you learn when you read this book. So, you know, I don't know how you people are, but in spite of myself, I did start to get better because I started to do what was suggested. And I wouldn't recommend for anybody to do what I did, because I was learning to live sober in a house with a guy that was learning to live sober with a baby and then another baby. And it was crazy. But God is miraculous. My God is miraculous, because it wasn't easy to stay sober. It wasn't easy to not kill each other. And somehow we managed. But I can't take lots of time, I have to keep moving, because I want to share a little bit about what it's like working the steps today. So I did get through the steps. I did my step 1, 3, 4, 5. I did a step 5 with a woman. I didn't trust men. The people that were in service found me a woman to do a step 5 with. And we don't do step 5s the way you do down here. We go to people like clergy people or psychologists, or they do this voluntarily, but we go to like professionals. And one of the reasons that it's suggested that we do that is because those people are sworn to secrecy, and we know that they shouldn't tell anybody what we tell them, and we don't want anybody to know what we've done. Like, I mean, we're the only ones that have done it, and we don't realize that. But because I think more down here, the majority of you do your step fives with your sponsors, and gosh, that must bring a real closeness between you. I talk to all kinds of stuff with my sponsor. My sponsor knows everything about me, but she's not the person I did my step 5 with. Anyways, one of the things that step 5 told me is that I wasn't a bad person. I wasn't this horrible, evil person that I thought I was. I was sick. And I reacted to life a lot of my reaction to life was because of things that happened to me in my past. And so I had to let go of those things. And, you know, that's where step 6, 7, 8, and 9 come in. And then, of course, 10 and 11 teach me to turn my life over to God, own up to the wrongs I do today, and maybe clean up anything from the past that I haven't cleaned up yet. And I was reminded over and over and over again that we do not graduate from this program. It's a continual living program. And we build a relationship with our higher power, and that's how we learn to live. Not according to my will, but according to my higher power's will. And then we go on to step 12 and continue to try to, first we have a spiritual awakening. Well, mine is that I've learned to live sober, and I still can't believe today that I'm still sober. It's been a long time. And more than half my life I've been sober. And I was so sick when I got here. And And the thought, you know what, even the thought of sitting here in front of a group of people and talking, that would, well, I'd have to drink to do it. There's no way I could do this sober. In school, in grade 9, we had to do a speech arts, and my mom had choke cherry wine in the basement, and I went down, got a Tupperware glass, and put some choke cherry wine in that and took it to school with me. I got an 86 on that speech. So I thought that was the answer. Well, it turned out to not be the answer by a long shot. And so, you know, so today I've learned that I don't need anything but God's power to help me to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, or to share my story. Sometimes we sit here and it's kind of like doing another step five. I'm telling you some stuff about myself that I just need to share. And I hope that something I say helps somebody or enlightens somebody. So we get those steps done, and we continue to stay sober. And, you know, we go to roundups, and we listen to people share their stories. And there's all these success stories from the Al-Anons and the AAs, who both spouses came into the program, and they've been married for 47 years and 50 years. And I thought, this is going to be great. We're going to make it. And at 17 years of marriage, my husband chose to take up residence elsewhere. And when that happened, it's just one of the most memorable times in my sobriety, because, you know, I totally fell flat on my face. And all I knew to do was go back to step one. My life was unmanageable by a long shot. I was powerless. And step two said that God could restore me to sanity. And step three said, give it to God and see what happens. And, you know, in that time, I was an at-home mom, and I had nothing to do. I couldn't function, so I smoked and I read the Bible. I opened up the Bible and I started to read right from the beginning. And you know what I learned by the time I was half done is, like, we've been screwed up all our lives. We've been doing the same thing over and over again for centuries, for thousands of years. And, like, why aren't we learning anything? And then I think, you know, I've got this program that's teaching me to live a better life. And Jay, last night Jay said some things, and he said some really profound things, and, you know, I'm sure all of us have thought at one time or another, if everybody could have this program, what a wonderful world we'd live in. But maybe that's not going to happen, but we have a wonderful group of people here together, and so I'm so grateful to be a part of that. Anyways, eventually, by doing the steps again, I literally did the steps again. I went through step four and five, and I managed to get back on my feet again. And, you know, one foot in front of the other, work the program, hang out with your friends in the program, and ask God to help you. And life just got better. I can't go into all the things that got better. But anyways, I of course, you know, you all know Glenn, and I met Glenn. And we have a lot of things in common, which is the program, which is our faith, and you know, like, we have hope, and so we plug along, and we have our troubles too, but we always go back to this program, and I shouldn't say we always go back to this program. I have never left this program. I don't leave my reading. I don't leave my praying. Some days are not as great as others, but I'm just working at progress, and we get to be down here in the winter. I was about 40 years old. I was down here with my first husband, and his parents used to come down here. And I remember sitting in a lawn chair eating oranges, and everybody was having their happy hour, and I'm eating oranges as they're having their drinks. And I said, man, when I retire, this is where I want to spend my winters. And, you know, at one point, that dream was gone because that husband was gone. And then, you know, but that's not how life is. If I put my life in God's hands, He provides me alternatives, and sometimes they're better than what I already had, which this is. This, you know, this is all better than what I used to have. So my time's up. I just need to share this with you, because somehow it's just about living the steps continually, and I can't even go into the traditions. There's not enough time, but I know these guys will cover it. The traditions keep our groups together. The traditions keep me from leaving my group and going to another, and going to screw up another group. Like, I just need to stay and try and fix my own group. There's a little reading in the grapevine years ago about how Sponsee was going to leave his group, and the sponsor said, don't go and screw up another group, just stay and fix your own. So I've taken that advice many, many times. And life goes on and stuff happens. And just a couple of months ago, my sister passed away. She was 53 years old. And she probably suffered from the disease of alcoholism. She died from COVID. But she had a resentment against me. And I made amends to her years ago when I did that step five. And I thought everything was fine. But I believe that as her drinking progressed, her resentments came back. And so by the time she died, she really hadn't had anything to do with me for the last couple of years. And the last time I talked to her was on September 26th, which was her birthday, and November 25th, actually, the coroner phoned me to tell me she had passed away. And she was alone in her house for 2 days before anybody found her. And, you know, it was just one more time. The thing is that the guilt, because I did hurt her in the past, the guilt came back, just came back horribly. So there's guilt and grief and guilt and grief and guilt and grief. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of the steps, because of step 10 and 11, basically, right now, I just worked so hard on those steps. And what those steps said to me is let go, let go. You've made amends to her. God has forgiven you. Forgive yourself. You're not that person today. Because of the steps, you've changed. You've made a complete change in your life. And just let it go. And if it wasn't for the steps, I don't know where I'd be right now. So I just want to end with that. I thank you all. Thank you for letting me share. I thank you for my sobriety. And I wish you all another great day of sobriety. And thanks for being here. Thank you.
Paul, my name is Paul. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Is this close enough? Okay. How's that? I have a hard time talking from a chronic disease, so I'll try and do my best, and hopefully God will help me get through this. So my name is Paul. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date was July 9th, 1997. My home group is the Gentleman's Group, and I have a sponsor, and I sponsor men. My first drink was on December 24th, 1964. What a way to celebrate Christmas, drunk on your ass. And it was a slow road to hell for 33 years. And I caused a lot of pain, and drinking brought me to my knees. And by the way, I never tried rubbing alcohol, but aqua velva tastes better. And I went to treatment right away, and I was so desperate. I did what I was told to do, which is amazing for this alcoholic. And I went to treatment. I got a sponsor. I went to meetings, and got into service work. My first sponsor was big into service work and big into meetings. And I was told, spend six nights a week at a meeting, and the seventh night you stay home with your husband, so that you had that family time. And I did that, and I worked the 12 steps. Then I integrated the 12 steps. First time through them, I thought, oh, that's nice. Second time through them, oh, this feels better. Today, I love and live the steps. I mean, there's nothing about it. If I don't have the steps, I don't have anything. And that's what keeps me going. And what I've learned through the steps is that if I'm not the problem, there is no solution. And that keeps me above water. Also, I've gotten, the assets are gotten better, and the liabilities have gotten less. As long as I keep doing what I'm doing, that's going to keep going the way it's going. I have a higher power today. I came in here godless, and I have a higher power today, which I call God, because that's the word we can understand in our Judeo-Christian relation, society. And the other thing I obtained was some self-worth. I didn't think I was worth a damn thing when I got here. And I didn't care for myself. And I never expected to find God, and I never expected to have a spiritual life. Now, I came in here confusing spirituality with religion. And then, there is a big difference. And I found out I couldn't get anywhere without letting go and taking my inventories and cleaned up the mess I'd made. And that was something that I've continued to do, because things continue to crop up. And what happened was I got serenity. I hit the mega jackpot. I didn't think that I'd ever feel like that. And each day it gets better. And my purpose today is to serve God, my sponsees, my group, my district, and then my family, in that order. And if I keep that order in place and keep my priorities going, I'm doing the work I'm supposed to be doing that you guys expect out of me. I continue my relationship with God through three things. I got this from Mary Pearl. I love her. RPMs that get you motivated in the morning. reading, prayer, and meditation. So rev up your RPMs and go for it. There's two people I really like to listen to. One is Chris Raymer from Texas, AA, and Mary Pearl from North Little Rock in Alamont. I think she's passed on now. I'm not sure. Anyway, I was reading a book a few. I read a lot of literature. I like to read because it helps. A lot of trash novels, pulp fiction, but I do read a lot of good books. And I was reading a book that was written by a professor in 1898, 97, somewhere in that time period. It's an old book my dad gave me. And he said, define your God, look at the qualities your God has, and strive for those qualities. I'll never be God, but I can get more God-like as I work this program. And that's what I strive for. I've got I came in here with my concept of God was a hateful, vengeful God that's going to, if you look what was hanging on the wall, but look what he did to his son. that wasn't pretty. And today, it's I have a loving, caring God. He's friendly. He's humorous. He takes care of me and makes sure that I have everything I need. And I couldn't ask for anything more. But and the thing about serenity is, serenity as a result of working the steps, working the program, allows me to know what I can change and what I can't change, and the difference. And I didn't think that would ever happen because I was screwed up. Today I got good relationships with my Creator, and that's pretty much how I continue to stay sober, is with these steps. And I have a unity with God today. And if I didn't have that unity with God, which is my sobriety, I wouldn't be here. The traditions. Dr. Bob said the program is simple: love and service. Well, knowing God is to know love. I didn't know what love was when I got here. I thought love was sex, like most people did, And let me tell you, I tried to find as much love as I could when I was out there running and gunning. And today I'm in harmony with God. I live and breathe love. I live and breathe in grace. And it doesn't get any better than that. And love that is given is a love of choice. And I think that's amazing. I can give love and get love back. And love, and not love out of attraction or obligation. It's a love of choice. That's to me, that's the best love. It's vital to any relationship. Love in any relationship is important. But if you're in a marriage, it's a little bit more intimate and a little bit more intense. But it's pretty much the same thing. And the traditions are important in relationships because they guide the relationships, in the group, in our families, in our marriages. And I've learned a lot along the way. But I can't keep it if I don't give it away. So I have to give as much love away. And every time I give somebody love, I get twice as much back. It's the miracle of this program. And I've also learned when I experience love and live in love, I don't have hate. You can't have hate and love at the same time. You can't have hate, love, and resentments at the same time. It just doesn't happen. So if I stay in love, I don't get upset as much. I don't get resentments, and I keep going. And it's a freedom. It's a freedom I never thought I would have. And it's amazing for me. And when two or more get together, that's a relationship, whether it's 10 seconds or whether it's 30 years. You have a relationship, and there has to be a mutual relationship. And mutual desire for that relationship, and it'll run its course. I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that I have a lot of people that I'll always call friends, but I don't see them on a regular basis. I don't talk to them on a regular basis, but I do occasionally talk to them. But I still consider them friends, and we move on. And that's what I've done. wanting relationships, not a sponsee that wants me. I'm so lonely. I want a relationship. I said, what do you have to bring to that relationship? Nothing. Well, then how can you be in a relationship if you can't bring anything to the relationship? I said, you're lonely. Get a dog. I mean, it's that simple. And he didn't. Still wants a relationship. And I've had good luck with relationships. And I spend a lot of time on love because it's such a big part of my life. When I first got sober, there was a couple called Bob and Paulette. I love them to death. they took me under their wing, and they had, each of them had over 20 years of sobriety at the time. And they were, to me, they were an older couple, but they weren't that much older than me. But I called them my AA dad and mom, because they were the parents I never had, the parents I wanted, you know, the parents I thought my parents should be. They taught me a lot, and so and I'll never forget them. But what they taught me is it takes action. And, you know, it says in the book of James, which if you read the book of James in the Bible, it's pretty much like the Alcoholics Anonymous book. I think Bill pulled a lot of stuff from there. Faith without works is dead. So if I know that if I don't continue this work, if I don't take the action, I'm going to be dead, which in my case means I'm going to go back out there sometime. And it just, well, I just have one beer tonight, and 3 nights from now I'm laying around a bunch of empty bottles, and it's not pretty. Communication. Make sure you're on the same page. What another thing I've learned, and I learned this from Mary Pearl, is when you're having a conversation, make sure you're both on the same topic or the same level, fact to fact and feeling to feeling. If I have a feeling and I'm expressing that feeling, the person I'm talking to is presenting me with facts, I'm not going to hear it. And so I have to find out, listen, and say, are they talking facts or feelings? Then I'll know how to approach that. And it saves a lot of arguments. And the other thing is that when you go into a relationship and go into a discussion with somebody, take God along. If God's not there, it's not going to be as productive as it would be. God is important in a relationship. That's where unity comes from. Our step two tells us we have a loving God in our group, and that same loving God can be held in a marriage, a relationship, a friendship, golf buddy, whatever. It's amazing how that can take place. Now, what is my part of that relationship? What am I responsible for? I'm responsible for my own actions. I have to do my own thing. I have to practice self-care. If I don't take care of myself, it's not going to work. Learn to be alone, but not lonely. Don't live in justification and rationalization. Now, I'm going to quote Mary Pearl on this because I don't want anybody to think I have a potty mouth. But she said, rationalization and justification are like masturbation. You're still getting screwed in the end. And I thought that was good. But there's always room for improvement. I thought I'd hit the jackpot, and then it keeps getting better. As long as the more I work this program, the more money there is in the bank. And I love that. Fear, dishonesty, ego, and self-will will kill a relationship faster than anything. So I got to remember that. I got to, you know, got to go into any relationship humble. And don't judge. There was a woman I used to go to a meeting with. She was a school teacher. Her name was Polly. And I got so tired of hearing about her boy that was in prison in California. And yadda, 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 yadda. And so our group split into two groups every time. We'd have a, you know, get a start out, and then we'd split into two groups. So I always watched where Polly was going. I went to the other group. And one day, because I was judging her, I didn't like what she had to say. One day I went into the room and sat down, and here comes Polly. And you want to know something? That was the day she said something I needed to hear. And my perception of Polly changed. We got to be friends and I got to like her, but I had judged her and discounted her ability to provide me with anything. And that's happened a lot. The people I've disliked the most in AA have turned out to be really good friends, because God puts them in my life for me to hear what they have to say. And they're there for a reason. And that doesn't, you know, that didn't happen before I got here. And the other thing, another thing that I can do to keep a relationship healthy and practice traditions is don't do for others what they can do for themselves. You know, when I was diagnosed with Parkinson's, I didn't want to ask for help for things. And today when people offer to help me get out of a chair or something, I graciously take it, because I realize I need it. And so I also would like to do things for myself, and I'll say that. I said, I think I can handle this. And so I don't expect somebody to do for me what I can do for myself, and I don't do for somebody else what they can do for themselves. And that's just respecting them. That's just a simple respect that we have in our relationships. And expectations and resentments. Oh, God, don't have those. I think, you know, I've got triggers. I've got issues. I hate that in AA meetings. It drives me friggin' nuts. And expectations are triggers, and issues are resentments. It's that simple. Read the book, clean them up, and get out of my face. You know, I don't want to listen to your crap. And discussion is good, but arguing is bad. And it doesn't take much for that discussion to go to arguing if you don't have God in that discussion, in that relationship, because you're taking your self-will and running with it. We can't do that if we're going to maintain our traditions. Relationships are important for me. Success in AA is important for me, and I will continue to do those as long as I live. The traditions, I like to focus on relationships because that's what it's about. Today I still do, I'm doing lots of service work. I'm an alternate GSR and alternate intergroup rep for my home group. I'm treatment coordinator for the district, and last panel I was DCMC for Yuma, Arizona. And I love being a service. I love being able to make sure other people get recovered. I go down to the mission one night a week to take a meeting down there, a big book study. And that is just amazing to work with those people at the mission. When I came to Yuma, I said, I'll never go down to the mission. It's interesting, I started going to meetings and I got a sponsor. I asked this guy to be my sponsor, and 3 years later, I told him, I was afraid of you. You were too conservative for me. He goes, that's all right, I was afraid of you, you were too liberal for me. So and he made me start over again. Step one, read the book. Step three, on your knees with your sponsor, say you're let go. And that was what I needed at the time. That jump started my next phase of recovery, and it's been going good ever since. I want to close with something that is very, very much a big part of my life, and it's the first two verses from the song Amazing Grace. Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. Thank you.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is David. I'm an alcoholic. Am I booming in the room? Okay, good. We're all here bright and early for our recovery. And thank you both so much for asking me to do this. It's an honor to always come and share with the rest of you. Can you read the topic off of the sheet? Just read that for me real quick. That's the part I wanted to hear. Okay. Because when I read the topic, I saw that the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, and then I saw that last little bit on the bottom there where it says, say it again? One alcoholic helping another alcoholic. So I will talk just briefly about the steps and traditions, but I really want to focus on the one alcoholic helping another alcoholic, if that's okay. I guess I'm going to skip 11 steps. Anyway. All right, so first of all, I do know that most meeting halls you go to, they have the steps on the wall in the back of the hall or whatever. They'll have them up there in those big banners and stuff. And I would just suggest to anyone that is new, if you do want to do them off the wall, you're probably going to have some off-the-wall results. That was certainly my experience. I think I was about 3 days sober and saw those things on the wall and was reading those. And that step 9 looked really important. And I knew I had some people I seriously need to apologize to. So I commenced to doing just that. And at 3 days sober, I went to the first house, and the guy sicked 2 Rottweilers on me, and I jumped over the chain link fence, and one of them was biting me in the ass as I was running away. And then the next house I went to, a guy punched me in the face through the screen door. Those two didn't work out. So I went to the third house, and a guy pulled a gun on me. And that was when I called up this guy that was going to be my sponsor and said, this is BS. I don't know what you guys are talking about, but this isn't cool at all. And he said, what the heck are you doing all the way up at 9? We haven't even started on 1. And so that was, I think, the first time I was like, maybe I should take suggestions from somebody else, and I don't know exactly what this is about, I was very fortunate for that guy. His name was David also, and who became my sponsor. And that guy, you know, he was just a very, very lovely man, and very wise and very humble and gracious. And he took me through that book, and he took me through those steps, and I will forever be grateful to him. He died some years ago, but anyway, David was just, you know, like we talk about when those people show up in our life. And anyway, so there are 12 steps, and I like to call them the ego-smashing proposals. There are 12 of them, and they're set up just for that very reason. And I just love the way they're set up in order. You know, it smashes our ego over and over again and allows us to create this relationship with the higher power that we talk about in the program. And, you know, in the book, in this book that we've been talking about in the very beginning, it's talking about an alcoholic like myself. I have to have what's called a psychic change. And then it talks about spiritual experiences that lead to a spiritual awakening, which allows me to have that psychic change. And through going through that process is when I can have those spiritual experiences. This is the whole point to it. And I did, you know, like many of us, I did, and still do today. But I wanted to kind of fast forward a little bit. I'm going to talk to you more about step 12. And working with another alcoholic. So I figured maybe I'd just share a couple stories with you about that, and then we'll see where that goes. But first of all, this importance of working with another alcoholic, that's also mentioned in the book a whole lot. In fact, in the very beginning, in the doctor's opinion, they hit it twice. They talk about it twice with Bill saying, in the hospital, I need to go help somebody else. In fact, the second time they relate this story, I just thought it was hilarious. Because here's Bill, you know, his third or fifth time in the hospital, and it says he's, you know, he's in his hospital gown with his butt hanging out the back and an IV in his arm. And he tells the doctor on his bed, you know, I think I can help some of these other drunks in here. And it says, with some misgiving, we consented, right? So I'm just picturing this, and they're just like, yeah, what's it gonna hurt, right? Anyway, twice, right there in the doctor's opinion, they're talking about it, right? And then later on, it goes deeper into it, much deeper. The third step, in the third step prayer, at least this is my take on this, it says, take away my difficulties that victory over them will bear witness. In other words, God, help me, and in return, I will demonstrate how you help me to other people that are sick. And I did not realize that. I was probably 2 years sober when that realization came to me, that God didn't just get me sober for me. Because all that time, I really thought he did. I was just like, he loves me so much. I am a child of God. When I realized, oh, he got me sober so I could help other people get sober too. Anyway, and then of course we have that last chapter in there, the working with others, an entire chapter dedicated to that very thing. Anyway, I wanted to share a couple stories with you about that. So I'll start with this first one. So when I was about, I think I was about 6 years sober at the time, my youngest son, who was 8 at the time, was, we'll just say, mishandled by someone, okay, in a very bad way. And I spent a year in sobriety, court and judges and all of this, following this person going to prison for what had happened to my son. And during this time, I don't know, I probably had a half dozen guys I was working with. I was knee deep in the program. I was, you know, doing everything as far as all that goes. But what happened was, during that time, this white, hot rage built up inside of me to the point of where I was literally seeing murder every day. And I couldn't shake it. I just couldn't. And so, of course, I did what I was taught to do in this program. Aside from sharing with my closest friends about it, took it to prayer. And once again, I pleaded with God to help me with this problem because it was beyond me to fix it. And I get this call, like, I don't know, days into that, I get a call from this guy up at a treatment center. It's not a treatment center. It was a log cabin up in the mountains called Valley Camp. And it was owned by AA's. Awesome place. Just awesome. This is out in Utah. And it was a 12-step program run by AA's, you know, in-house, about a dozen guys. And for years, you know, they had like a chart with names of people willing to sponsor with their phone numbers. So I just randomly get this phone call from this guy while I'm in the midst of all this craziness I was just telling you. He says, hey, I got your number on the wall. I was wondering if maybe you could come up here and see me at Valley Camp. I says, yeah, sure. I'd be happy to come up and see you. So I drive up there. Well, it's like an hour drive up through the mountains to get to this place. So I go up there and I meet with him. And I become his sponsor. And we start going through the book. Well, there's these other 11 residents that are up there as well. And so when I'm sitting with him in the lodge, these other guys are kind of hanging out around and stuff, in and out. And we're going through the book and we're starting the deal. And they start getting real interested. Well, it turned into, I'd tell them I'd go up there once a week to another day, another day, another day, to where I'm going up there almost every day of the week. And then I end up taking all 12 of these guys through the entire big book. And we go through the whole book and all the steps. And, you know, things worked out with my son, and I didn't drink. And I don't know if I was on the edge of drinking or not. I just know that I was in a lot of trouble, and I couldn't deal with what was happening. And that working with another alcoholic, a bunch of alcoholics, what it turned into, really saved my bacon, you know. About 4 years, I think Jason, God bless him, I think he made about 4 years and relapsed and OD'd in a hotel room and died. And, you know, there's a lot of tragedy with working with alcoholics. I'm sure you guys know this, you know. There's miracles. We are miracles sitting here. But there's also a lot of tragedy and pain associated with alcoholism, you know. So anyway, Jason really saved my my butt there for many years. So let me tell you another story. So I had 12 years in sobriety when I relapsed on painkillers, on prescription opiates. And following that relapse, I struggled really hard to get back to sobriety and my relationship with God and the miracle of this program. I struggled hard. I could make it about maybe 4 months, and I'd be in an emergency room, nearly dead. And then I would get sober again for a little bit, back out, and again, same thing. It was about 4 to 5 months, I think. 5 months was about the max I could not be hospitalized for my disease. So I had landed here in Yuma. In fact, I took a job here in Yuma. I was about a year sober at that point, and I came out here to Yuma and was doing really good for about maybe 4 months, 4 or 5 months. Went back to Utah, and one of my rehab romances that didn't work out got me back in a bottle of pills. And so I came back to Yuma, relapsed, and was not sober again. And ended up at the, having to go through emergent surgery at Yuma Regional. And then from there, I went to the Crossroads Mission and, kicked it on a cot for 7 days, trying to get off all of the chemicals that were in my body. And then returned to my job and started going back to the 449 Club, to the meetings we do here in Yuma. And so I'm back on the path. However, this fourth or fifth time now that I've tried to get sober and stay sober, I had no connection to that God I had all those years before in recovery. And I just accepted it. I just said, you know what? I guess this is just how it's going to be now after you know, after the big fall from where I was, maybe this is just how it's going to have to be from now on. But it's better than dying. So I'll just trudge this way. You know, I'll keep going to meetings. I'll keep talking the talk. I'll keep doing all the stuff I'm supposed to be doing. I'll keep praying. But maybe he's just not going to answer me anymore. And hopefully I can stay alive this time. So I made it about 30 days. In fact, it was this time. It was February when they had the rodeo parade. I think it's like the 5th of February or something. Anyway, I was 30 days sober. Well, at my job, we every year we build these big giant parade floats for the big rodeo parade going downtown. So we built this huge parade float. And we won, right? We're down there. I'm with my boss. We're in his truck with the big float behind us. And we win. We win this big 4-foot-high trophy, you know. We're, you know, it's awesome. And we got the trophy sitting in the bed of his truck. And the thought out of nowhere pops into my mind. We should go get loaded. After this is done, right, we go park the trailer. Let's go get loaded. And it terrified me, because I knew this was it. There's no more. I'm gonna die. I almost died 30 days ago. This time I'm gonna die. If I don't do it myself, the disease is gonna do it to me. And I thought to myself, I'm absolutely crazy, because I'm thinking about doing this, knowing what's going to happen. And I also know I can't stop it. When that thought goes, can't. So I'm scared. And I go across the parade ground. Huh, you guys. And I go across the parade ground to a porta potty. And God will go anywhere, even into a porta potty. So, as disgusting as this might sound, I got on my knees in the porta potty and begged him and told him, I'm crazy. I'm absolutely crazy. And so I left, and I'm walking back to the truck, and I get a phone call from this guy that I had sponsored off and on for years. They called him Relapse Robbie. Poor old Robbie. He could not stay sober. Maybe 30, maybe 60, back out. Maybe 30, maybe 60, back out. So Robbie's on the phone. Hadn't talked to him in probably 3 years. He says, Dave, I went to a bunch of meetings. He was out in Utah. He's like, I went to a bunch of meetings to get your phone number. I'm in trouble. You know, same scenario. You know, my wife kicked me out. She's changed the locks. My kids won't talk to me. I don't know what to do. I'm done. And I said, Robbie, can you get out here to Yuma? He goes, yeah, I think I could. And I'm like, well, can you, you know, drive, get on a plane, whatever you need to do. If you can come out here, you can detox on my couch, or I'll get you into a detox, but let's pick this up, you know, and do what we got to do. And so we did. And we got off the phone. By the way, I'm doing this right next to my boss, who's not an alcoholic, on the phone explaining all this. And he knows I'm 30 days sober. He knew I was at the Crossroads Mission getting sober. He knows all about what's going on. And he hears this conversation. So when I get off the phone with Robbie, he's got a plane ticket online, and he's ready to come. And he came that following Monday. Well, we had the parade. We drove down, cheers and all the wonderful stuff. And I 100% forgot about even the thought of drinking. Completely forgot. Until we got back, dropped everything off, and there's a 4 o'clock meeting in the afternoon at the club we go to, and I'm on my way over to the club, and it dawned on me what had happened that morning. And I was like, you know, I never realized that I could do the second step twice. I thought after I did it that first time, that was it. I came to believe I'm good. I didn't realize I could do it twice. And you know what? It's been 8 years since that happened, and he has restored me to my sanity. And it's because of working with other alcoholics It's a tremendous part of my recovery. I live and breathe it. I feel that I have a debt to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have an even bigger debt to God. And I take it real serious. So when it comes to helping others, it not only saves my bacon, but I'm also trying my very best to pay back that debt. Because I am of the hopeless variety of alcoholic. I didn't spill a martini on a yacht. I never drank rubbing alcohol, but I have smoked a banana peel. Just so you know. Anyway, am I out of time? Where are we at?
You got 1 minute left.
1 minute left. Love you guys. Have a great time at the roundup here.